And now this is All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News. Driving on the highway in Columbus is not the best time to roll your windows down and switch on the cruise control. You'll likely be braking a lot, and you might have to turn your music down so you can be more attentive to the road. It's even worse when you enter a work zone, which there are a lot of now in and around Columbus. There have been more work zones coming up here and there, and likely more to come, following the passage of Issue 2, a ballot measure that provides $2.5 billion over the next decade for local infrastructure and projects like roads, bridges, water systems, and more. The Ohio Department of Transportation joins us today to discuss current projects around Central Ohio and issues with reckless driving. With us is Matt Bruning, Press Secretary for the Ohio Department of Transportation. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And Hannah Salem, a Public Information Officer for ODOT's District 6, which includes several counties here in Central Ohio. Welcome to All Sides, Hannah.
Thank you for having us.
So there have been many large construction projects around the area this season. Why are these projects always in the summertime? Why are there so many in the summer?
Yep, we schedule our projects in the summertime to have as many barrels off the road for our winter season when our ODOT crews have to be out there plowing the roads. So obviously our large projects like the one on downtown Columbus through I-70 and 71, that work zone kind of remains there all year. But most of the work is done in the summer because the temperatures are good and we can get all of that done.
So summer is the season. So despite the fact that, you know, people want to be going on road trips, they're going to have to deal with construction all over the state, Matt. I mean, it's not just what we see here in Columbus. Do you even have a number of how many road projects there are?
Yeah, new this year, more than 950.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just new.
That's
this
new.
Year,
okay.
Right? Not in addition to, and of course, that's in addition to some of the carryover projects that Hannah talked about, like the downtown ramp up. So, yeah, it's a busy year. You know, it's always busy. There's always something to do to maintain our roads in good fashion, and I think we do a decent job of that at ODOT, certainly. You know, it's like doing the laundry. There's just never an end to it.
There's never an end to laundry and dishes, right?
Absolutely.
And someone always needs dinner. So how do you decide what needs to happen during the day, impacting rush hour times versus what can be done overnight?
Yeah, a lot of our major metro areas, we have what's called permitted lane closure times. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we want to minimize the impacts to traffic. We know that when you have a large queue of traffic, that's when the chances of a secondary crash go up, someone hitting the back of the queue because they're not paying attention, and obviously causes delay and inconvenience. We try to minimize all of that. So to the extent we can, we do a lot of our maintenance projects in our major cities like Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, Toledo. We try to do that as much in the overnight hours as we can. Obviously, it's not always possible for a lot of operations and obviously these big construction projects. But again, where we can, we do.
Well, let's talk about a big construction project. Hannah, the biggest project in your section of ODOT, perhaps maybe in all the state, I don't know, is the reconstruction of Interstate 70 and 71 in downtown Columbus. Mm-hmm. It started a long time ago. If I read it right, it started in 2010. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. It started in 2010, actually, with the I-71 and 670 interchange. So we've completed about $400 million worth of work, and then we have about $600 million worth of work currently happening.
And if my math is correct, you add those up. I mean, it's a billion. It's more than a $1 billion project at this point. I read it's a $1.4 billion project, and it's the reason that it's happening is because that area, the 70-71 interchange, was always congested and always had a lot of crashes, right?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
So what's being done exactly? Like, what's the big goal here? Because this is a long time to be under construction.
Yep. A lot of the work that's ongoing right now is to kind of untangle a lot of those ramps. So if you're on 71 South and want to continue, maybe you're going from Cleveland to Cincinnati, for example, you have to get on I-70 and then sort of merge across three of the lanes there. So what we're working on right now, we actually have two phases of construction going on concurrently. So the one project is called 4R6R, which I know is a very fancy name, but that's basically just focusing on the ramps there. And the highlight of that is that big...
Four ramps, six ramps, 4R, is that what that means? Okay.
It's just the ramps in the area. Mm-hmm. But one of the highlights of that project is that big flyover ramp that you see being constructed that is changing the skyline of downtown Columbus. So that ramp is actually set to open here by the end of the year, and it will be the new ramp that carries 71 southbound traffic. to continue on down towards Cincinnati in the south. So you won't have to merge across all those lanes of traffic anymore.
Now, Matt, is this one of these projects where when you think about it, you wish, because it's been going on since 2010, mm-hmm. you wish city planners 50 years ago would have just thought ahead to how big the city was going to be and done it differently? Because this is a huge change you're trying to make.
Yeah, and you do see designs of highways and interchanges that, you know, develop or evolve over the years. I mean, you think about, you go back to the you know, when we were kids probably, there were cloverleaf interchanges all over the place, where one that comes to mind, for example, is up on the northwest side at 270 and 33 in Dublin. That used to be a full cloverleaf interchange. That design worked great in the 50s and 60s and 70s, but as traffic volumes built and as engineers started to look at that's not a really efficient design, we started getting more of the flyovers and changing the way we build the infrastructure to adapt to those growing traffic volumes. Hannah brings up a great point. Back in the 50s and 60s, when the interstate was built in downtown Columbus, that stretch, it wasn't really that big of a deal to be able to dive across all lanes of traffic. Probably wasn't smart even then, but it wasn't as big of a deal because there wasn't as much traffic. Now we have a lot more people trying to do that, and it just creates a big congestion mess. So now we untangle those weaves.
Yeah, and so when will this whole project be done? Or is it one of those things where it's almost never done in this area, 7071?
Yeah, so the two phases that we currently have under construction, one of them is actually set to wrap up in the fall of 2026. So that includes that large flyover ramp that I mentioned, as well as the Front Street Bridge, which has been completely torn down and reconstructed, and that'll actually open later this summer. So a lot of things will be opening up now as we're sort of getting towards completion of that project. And then the second project that's in the same area actually kicked off last year, and that has a lot of bridge replacements on the High Street, 3rd, and 4th Street bridges. So these will be wider bridges, they'll be more pedestrian friendly, have a larger sidewalk, and they're even cap capable. So like 670 on High Street, where you have all those restaurants, you can't even tell that you're over a freeway. They have the potential to do that as well, exploring that with the City of Columbus. So that project will take us through the decade, but I also want to remind motorists
through the decade, so you mean
2030.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to put years on it.
I do want to remind folks that the reason that the project takes so long is that we're also maintaining three lanes of traffic through downtown while we're rebuilding the entire interstate.
I suppose you could just close everything and build it faster, but then that would create a whole new slew of problems.
Yep.
All right. Well, this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about transportation issues in Central Ohio with Matt Bruning, Press Secretary for the Ohio Department of Transportation, and Hannah Salem, Public Information Officer for ODOT's District 6, which includes Central Ohio. Another big project you have is on the far east side. This is to deal with traffic between downtown Columbus and the east suburbs, which has been increasing a lot as more people move out to that side of the city. This includes changes to the ramps at 270 and 70. You're widening the road. Can you tell me more about what's happening on the east side with the growth there?
Yeah, so similar to the downtown ramp up project that we just talked about, one of the trends with this project too is actually untangling a lot of the merge and weave that you see at this location too. So one of the ways that we're doing that is we're actually building a new ramp that will take 270 southbound traffic headed on 70 eastbound. So if you're going from 270 towards Buckeye Lake area, we're removing that existing loop ramp that you have where you have to go around in the circle and then fight across a few lanes of traffic to stay on 70. We're replacing that with a flyover ramp as well. So it'll just take you all the way over everything and drop you right on 70 where you need to be.
Has that started?
Yep, that ramp will actually be opening later this summer as well. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. I haven't paid attention driving that way. Maybe at 70 and 71, I noticed the ramp more right over my head. Okay. So when is that whole project? Is that a multi-year project too?
Yes. So we're focusing on the eastbound approach on 70 and 270. So that project will wrap up later this summer. And then we're actually flipping and starting on the westbound side, which construction actually just started on that last week, and that will be a multi-year project expected to wrap up in 2027.
Now, Matt, from an entire ODOT perspective, all these construction projects where the lanes are constantly changing, maybe one week you drive through and it looks one way and then all the barrels move and it looks a different way. Do you warn people, or do you feel like people are having trouble ever driving through these construction zones just because they do seem intimidating sometimes?
They certainly can be. And, for example, I live in Chillicothe And there's a big project going on right now on our bypass where 23 and 35 come together. And they split, and we have what's called a contraflow lane. So one lane that takes you to 35 West goes actually to the other side of the highway, and you're running against traffic with a concrete barrier there. We've had a lot of crashes in that location, unfortunately. There's a lot of signage there. There are four layers of signs, but you've got to read them. You've got to pay attention, and you've got to slow down and go the speed limit. The speed limit's 50 in that zone, for example, and when I drive through there at 50, I'm getting run over. It's like that, unfortunately, with too many of our work zones. And so I think when people, if they just would slow down, pay attention to the signage, pay most attention to the workers that are out there, that's a safety issue, I think you'll get through those work zones. I mean, tens of thousands of people do it successfully every day. It's those that don't pay attention and are distracted by their phone or something else. That's typically when we see those crashes occur.
Well, I'm going to pivot into what has been now a viral video from Interstate 71 that you put out into the world, Matt. So I'm sure many people have seen it. In case you haven't, the video shows a red van coming to a full stop on Interstate 71. They obviously missed their exit onto 670, so they decide to stop and they're going to go in reverse on the highway. But then a three-car pileup occurs because of this van behind the van. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you decided to post that footage?
Yeah, we don't get in the habit of posting crash footage too often from ODOTs, just because obviously it's a traumatic event for a lot of people and for folks that are watching it too. But with this one, we felt like there was an educational moment, something that we could maybe basically put out there and say, hey, we're going to reinforce that you need to not do this. And maybe if you didn't know that you're not supposed to do this, teach you that you're not supposed to do this. And the message was very clear. Look, we have more than 5,000 ramps in the state of Ohio on the ODOT system. If you miss your exit, just go to the next one. There's one right up the road. Flip around. That you can do a lot of different things. Just don't do this.
Yeah, and Hannah, this video went viral nationwide, not just here in Columbus. This happened in your district, District 6. This was on one of your highways. What did you think whenever you saw it?
It was definitely a wild video. I understand why it went viral. And like Matt said, you know, we don't tend to post a lot of the crash footage, but I do think that it sparked a really good conversation around roadway safety and the need to pay attention when you're driving, you know, the other drivers. Obviously, if you're looking at your phone, you're not going to see a car stopped in front of you on the interstate. Not that they're supposed to be stopped,
right.
But there could be. I mean, this person made a mistake, obviously, and this person was trying to correct their mistake in a bad way.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
there are other reasons people could stop on the highway.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you never know what could be in front of you, right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Someone could run out of gas. Someone could, you know, there could be a piece of debris in the middle of the roadway. They're trying to stop and avoid something that's fallen out of a truck in front of them. We see that a lot, unfortunately. Mm. That's a whole other topic, but. you're right. There are lots of things that can change quickly, and that's why you need to be paying attention to the road, not something else.
Now, if you read the comments on the video, you know, you're saying that you posted it as a warning of what not to do, but there were a lot of comments and responses to the video that talked about Ohioans being bad drivers, and this was just an example of that.
Yeah.
Do you think that sentiment is true?
I think that wherever you are, that's where the worst drivers are. It's a perception thing. Now, I mean, there's studies and data that show, you know, this driver, this state has worse drivers than that state. And I'm sure Ohio is right up there in the middle of the pack, at least, because we seem to be for everything. But, you know, we all drive here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So our perception is that the people around us are the worst drivers in the country. I guarantee you, if I went and talked to my relatives in Indianapolis, they would tell me Indianapolis drivers are the worst in the world. So I think we all have plenty of bad things in our driving habits that we could get rid of anywhere in the country.
Now, I'm not sure if, it's going to be related or if it can fix everything, but Governor DeWine is calling for more driver's education programs, including bringing driver's ed back to high school curriculum and not just having 16-year-olds take driver's ed, but everyone. Whether or not Ohio is full of bad drivers, do you think there's a need for more driver's education?
I think there is. I mean, I remember in high school, Mr. Phillips was my driver's ed teacher. God rest his soul. And I don't know that my high school offers that program at this point. You know, there have been a lot of budget cuts and things over the years, and that's probably one that has fallen by the wayside. But I think everybody would benefit from a retraining course, a refresher course, or if you're a new driver, the basics from the beginning would go a long way.
And Hannah, what do you think? I mean, we started the segment talking mainly about giant construction projects that, maybe we need some driver's education driving through road construction too.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And I know to Matt's point, you talked about having driver's ed in high school. I didn't have it offered in high school. I had to take private classes. And I know that that's not an opportunity for a lot of folks. So I think that having the possibility of maybe introducing that is a good thing. And ODOT does try and play a role in the education portion, like posting that video to share some education with people, reminding people to move over and slow down in our work zones or when our worker is present. But obviously, we're not the ones in the classes and teaching everything to anyone who's learning how to drive.
All right. Well, we're going to end it there, and we're going to talk more about driver's education in our next segment. But I want to say thank you to Matt Bruning, Press Secretary for the Ohio Department of Transportation. Thank you, Matt.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
And thank you to Hannah Salem, Public Information Officer for ODOT's District 6, which is here in Central Ohio. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
And again, we're going to be talking about driver's education and why it is so important to have with a local driving instructor. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
It's summer fun for everyone. Join WOSU at family community events and festivals all summer long. Have your picture taken with beloved PBS characters, do a craft, show your WOSU spirit, and win prizes. For all dates and locations, visit our events page, wosu.org/events. We can't wait to meet you.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Columbus driving is not an easy task. With construction season in full swing, navigating lane closures and detours can be tricky. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has recently called for new legislation on driver's education. He wants it back in high school curriculum, and he wants drivers of all ages to go through driver's ed. The governor also recently announced the launch of a media campaign to encourage parents to practice driving with their teens. We're learning about why driver's ed is important, and we'll have some driving tips with David Burke, driver's ed teacher at Faith Driving School in Hilliard. Welcome to All Sides, David.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
So have you given driver's ed classes mostly to 16-year-olds, or do you give them to people of all ages?
Yes. Most of our customers, about 90% of them, are teenagers, those first-time drivers between the ages of 15 and a half and 18. But we also teach people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and longer. We are right here near Ohio State. We get a lot of people that come in from all over the world, including the East Coast, like Boston or New York. And they're coming over here, and they're in Columbus, Ohio now. So they have to start learning to drive because we're a big city. We're spread out, and we like our cars much more than a city like Philadelphia.
Are you finding that most people taking driver's ed are being forced to do it by their parents, or are the people doing it willingly because they want to be able to drive better?
It's a huge mix of everything. I mean, some kids want to have that freedom. They want to get out there in their cars. And some kids are kind of comfortable at home, but their parents are like, I'm tired of driving you to soccer practice.
Yeah. So the parents force them into the driver lessons. I mentioned just a minute ago in the introduction that Governor DeWine is calling for more driver's education. He wants it back in high schools. Now, I know that if it's back in high schools, that might not help your private business. But what do you think about having more driver's education and having it be in high schools?
Well, oddly, the honest rep, it's always been in high schools. There are high schools that still do it and have been doing it for a while. But it's more complicated. It's more expensive. They have to have cars. They have to have – they pull a teacher out of the classroom. So – you say, I'm not worried about it interfering with my business. Honestly, I would love to work with more high schools and maybe as a partnership, that public-private thing. Because I am an expert in teaching driving, and I am an expert in the regulations that the state puts by. We have a great regulatory system in our state of Ohio that really helps us serve the people of Ohio better. So, yes, if I can work with high school and make their life easier, because they don't want to deal with the regulation, the complication, and the cost, but they do have resources that I don't have.
Yeah, so partnering with a high school will give you a guaranteed clientele, right?
Well, that and I'm from small town Ohio. A lot of the big problems are in the smaller cities or the outlying counties, and those have a hard time. And, you know, honestly, what's happening in the last 20 years is people in my industry, they retire and nobody replaces them. Mm. And so we get counties that are left without any driver's ed.
Well, okay, wow, yeah. So there's fewer driver's ed teachers than there used to be.
In some places, yes.
Okay. Is it, I mean, did you go to school to become a driver's ed teacher? How does one learn to become a driving teacher?
Well, actually, I have a degree from Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's in food science. So I was in all the food industries, engineering, everything in corporate America. And then I had some availability. My daughter was turning 15, and all of our friends were complaining about how the issues they were having with driver's ed. I'm going, you know, I did a little bit of that in college. Mm. And so I got with a company, learned a little bit. And tell you the truth, I was over near a driving school one time. I was talking to the owner. I'm going, hey, if you ever want to sell this place, let me know. He's going, when can we talk? And I love my job. I love working with teenagers. I love teaching driving. I love driving. And there's nothing like the feeling of getting in a car with somebody that's just so nervous and so anxious and so apprehensive. And after 2 hours of putting them in the car and going, here, you have control. You can do this. You see a huge personality change. It's like, if I can do this, I can do everything.
Wow. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about driving in Central Ohio with driver's ed teacher David Burke. So in the previous, earlier in the show, we were talking with Ohio Department of Transportation about a viral video that was out there of someone who came to a complete stop on 71. And it just led us into a conversation about whether Ohioans are bad drivers or if Columbus has reckless drivers. What do you think? Is Columbus full of reckless drivers?
No. We're not any worse than anywhere else. Again, I go to cities like Philadelphia. My daughter recently moved to Cleveland. I'm going, oh, man, we've got some issues up here. And, you know, I'm not slamming on Cleveland, but honestly, there was two motorcycles in Cleveland that I'm like, wow. But, you know, I see all these small things. I see every little thing. Even I notice every time I do something that's not perfect because I teach students how to be better. One of the great things we are doing, and Governor DeWine does have a passion for traffic safety, so he is improving our standards, and I would like it when Ohio gets to be known as the best driver's education, the safest driving, the best traffic safety in the state. And there are other states looking at some of the programs we're currently doing, and I'd like that to increase. But yes, we're doing well, but of course we can do better.
What are some of the driving standards that someone like the governor or lawmakers can put in place that drivers have to follow that you have to teach?
Well, there's currently, for a 16-year-old, they have to do four things. They have to have their temps for 6 months.
Okay.
They have to drive with their parents or family member or guardian for 50 hours. They have to do a 24-hour, mostly online course. There's very few in-person classes. There's a few schools that still do those. Most of the kids want to take them online for 24 hours, learn the rules and regulations. And then they have to drive with a licensed instructor for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's when we'll show them how to put all that stuff in application. So that's 8 hours with somebody that's been trained, that we have a curriculum, we have set routes and everything like that. And that's very important. And that's what he's trying to incorporate more for adults too.
Mm.
Right now, we have a very large problem in the state with people that are unlicensed and uneducated, taking money from people and teaching them how to drive. And some of them, I'm sure, are great at it. But some of them I've seen, the people will come to us after taking these classes and they don't get the state-issued certificates that they need to from a licensed instructor like me. But, yeah, we're having a problem right now, and I'm trying to work on some things to get some of these. It is a serious law. It's actually a felony if you teach driver's ed and you pay for it with a company that's not licensed, because we're licensed like any other, like a barber or an engineer or anything like that. We are trained. We do a lot of training. I have a very set curriculum, and I love doing my training. I love what I do.
Is there no requirement for, I mean, you mentioned all those requirements for 16-year-olds in order to get their license, but if you are, I don't know, say 25, do you have to do all of those things?
Currently, no. Mm-hmm. Now, we are looking at extending that age up to 22.
Mm.
So you can't just walk into the, yes, technically now you can walk into the BMV and you go, take me out for the test. And if you pass your test, you get your license. Mm-hmm. Now there's a newer rule. It's only a few years old. It's called the abbreviated adult program, where if you fail, you have to take 4 hours of online course and 4 hours with a licensed instructor, mm-hmm. or 24 hours with a friend or family. So that's better, but we can continue to increase this to make sure we have the safest roads in the nation.
And we also talked earlier in the hour about road construction. What's it like being a driving teacher? How do you teach people to navigate road construction? Do you have them as a part of your course go through construction barrels on 70 and 71?
I love road construction.
Yeah.
I'm the only person that ever drives along going, I wish there was more traffic. Because teaching somebody to change lanes when there's no cars around isn't really a challenge. I want to put those challenges in front of my students when I'm in the car with them so I can explain how to handle it. Because I don't want their first difficult experience just being when they're driving along after having a license and not knowing what to do. I'd rather have them be with us. So yes, I'm very big on the slow down pullover law. I don't care if they're flashing red and blue lights, a construction sign, tow truck drivers. People do not give enough respect to tow truck drivers, and there's been a lot of them injured and killed on the road. So anything you see, just slow down and get over. If I see a car on the side of the interstate, even if they're way over, I'm turning my turn signal on. I'm getting over at least half a lane. I'm giving them a little space. Just give a little space. Sometimes when we're out there driving, we need to enjoy driving. I love driving. And sometimes we just need to relax and chill.
Now, I haven't been in a driver's ed car in a number of years. I did take driver's ed when I was 16. But do you have a fleet? Do you drive in the kid's car or the parent's car? Or do you have your own car that you teach them in?
First of all, you're welcome to drive around with me. I love it when... Now, I am the training manager. I'm the owner. So, you know, I have adults sit in the back seat sometimes, occasionally, not very often.
For a refresher course. Yeah.
Well, actually, it's usually for, I'm very insistent that they be quiet because I'm teaching kids. They're to watch me and learn how to teach, not to teach the other.
I see.
Not to interfere with anything or interfere with my instruction. But yeah, if you want to see, you know, I've invited people from anywhere from police and other people. You want to see how I do it because it's. There's a lot more to it than most people realize.
So, but you have your own car? Is that?
Yes.
Do you have like your own brake on the other side and stuff?
It is. Yeah. It is state law in Ohio that when I'm teaching, it has to be in a state inspected car with an additional brake. It has additional mirror in it and it has the proper signage on the side. It actually has to say student driver on the front and the back of it. So yes, they're in my car. Now for their test, they're in their own car, whatever car they're going to come from. But some people actually rent my car. If all you have is a Suburban F-250, you want a normal-sized car to take the test in.
You want to have, yeah, you don't want to be parallel parking or doing a three-point turn in a giant car. Yeah.
Yes, but they're in my car, but everybody talks about the brake and thinks that's a big deal. Well, I don't use the brake too much. I try to teach them enough that we don't use the brake. Actually, I use the brake more in the cones, that little cone setup, that little maneuverability test. I'm going, slow down and stop and see where everything is, just like you're backing into your garage or something like that. And take the kids. I only teach two things when I'm driving. Observation and control. Look around everything, take your time to see everything and see how everything lines up. That's what we're really teaching these new drivers.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I want to thank David Burke, a driver's ed teacher with the Faith Driving School in Hilliard. Thank you, David, for joining us today.
Thank you for being along. I love talking about traffic safety.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.